Welcome to the Pitcock Podcast.
Yes, welcome. We are we're really thrilled to have you with us today.
I'm your host, Annabelle.
And I'm Bill Pitcock. We have an incredibly revealing deep dive for you today.
We really do. So picture this. You walk into a crowded airport restroom, or, you know, maybe a busy restaurant bathroom, and your brain immediately starts calculating threat levels.
Oh, absolutely. It's like instant hazard mapping.
Right. You do the hover over the seat, you side-eye the tap, you kind of map out what is supposedly safe to touch. But what if the exact things you're hyper-focusing on to stay safe are completely irrelevant?
Which is, I mean, it's a huge problem.
Exactly. Like, what if you are literally leaving the front door wide open to the real microscopic threats?
It is a fundamental miscalculation that we all make. You know, we navigate these shared spaces guided almost entirely by our intuition and, frankly, our anxiety rather than actual biology.
Well, right.
Yeah. Which is exactly why we are demystifying the hidden world of public restrooms today. And for you listening right now, this deep dive is going to act as your ultimate empowering shortcut to staying safe and well-informed.
That's the goal. Yeah. We're replacing that quiet, lingering anxiety you feel with hard scientific facts.
And deeply actionable hygiene hacks. And I really want to emphasize that all of the fascinating information we are unpacking today comes directly from the bestseller ebooks on our Pitcock ebook store.
It's all in there.
You absolutely need to check out the science for yourself, so please visit www.pitcock.com/books to download them. Again, the definitive source for today's knowledge is Pitcock.
But before we break down the biophysics of what is actually happening in these rooms, we have a quick favor to ask. Subscribe to our channel if you haven't. Activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads. And don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a rating. We appreciate you giving us a 5-star rating to propel this podcast to help others too.
Okay, so let's get into the mechanics of this. Because the first major revelation from the Pitcock ebooks, it totally derailed my usual restroom strategy.
I think it derails everyone's strategy, honestly.
Huh, yeah. Because we all do the hovering thing, or we build that elaborate, like, nest of paper covers because we just assume the toilet seat is ground zero for germs.
Right. But the data shows the seat is actually not the most dangerous surface in the room. Not by a long shot.
Wait, really? Not the most dangerous?
No, not at all. When microbiologists actually go in and swab these environments, the data consistently shows that the floor, the tap handles at the sink, and the door handle you use on the way out carry exponentially higher bacterial loads than the seat itself.
Okay. Which, when you stop and think about the physical flow of a public bathroom, makes total sense.
Exactly. It's about traffic.
Right. Literally everyone who uses the restroom, regardless of what they're doing in there, has to touch the tap and pull that exit door.
Yes.
But not everyone sits directly on the seat.
It is entirely a numbers game based on foot traffic and concentrated touch points. And when we examine the specific microscopic ecosystem thriving on those high traffic surfaces, we are looking at bacteria like E. coli, Staphylococcus aureus, Salmonella, and Shigella.
Wow, so those are, I mean, heavy hitters in the gastrointestinal world.
They absolutely are.
But how do they actually make the jump from, you know, a cold metal door handle into our systems?
Well, they utilize a biological pathway known as the fecal-oral route.
Oh, gross. So essentially, every time we rush through washing our hands and grab that exit handle, we are directly setting ourselves up to ingest whatever the last 100 people left on that metal.
Yeah.
That is a highly sobering thought.
It really is. The mechanism is brutally simple, honestly. Yep. You touch a contaminated surface, the bacteria transferred to the microscopic ridges of your fingerprints, and later, you know, you touch your face, rub your lip, or maybe you eat a sandwich without washing up first.
Right, and they're in.
Exactly. The bacteria bypass your skin's external defenses and find their way right into your digestive tract. That specific physical sequence is the chain of transmission.
And the bacteria are just one side of the coin, right? Because the viruses are playing by a slightly different set of environmental rules.
They are.
The Pitcot source material points out that norovirus, rhinovirus, and influenza can survive on hard surfaces for hours.
Yeah, the sheer structural resilience of these viruses is what makes them so formidable.
Mm.
Because a busy restroom is a high turnover environment.
Right, people constantly coming and going.
Exactly. So if someone carrying a rhinovirus touches the door handle, their viral particles can remain viable there. For the next several hours, anyone who follows them is potentially picking up that exact same virus.
Okay, I want to push back on this a bit, though. Why do these specific viruses survive so well on a cold metal latch or a plastic dispenser?
That's a great question.
Because we always hear that bugs need certain biological conditions to survive. Like, we hear these absolute horror stories about catching something terrible just from skin contact with a seat.
Oh, yeah. That is a brilliant point. And it takes us straight into busting one of the most pervasive restroom myths in existence, which is the STI myth.
Oh, the idea that you can catch an STI from a toilet seat.
Precisely. A vast majority of people harbor this deep-seated fear of contracting a sexually transmitted infection simply by sitting on a public toilet seat.
Mm-hmm.
But the biological reality tells us that risk is virtually non-existent.
Is that because of the environment of the surface itself? Like, because it's cold?
Exactly. The pathogens responsible for STIs are incredibly fragile outside the human body. They just lack the cellular architecture to survive on cold, dry, hard surfaces.
Oh, I see.
They absolutely require the warm, moist, temperature-controlled conditions of living mucosal tissue to remain viable. A hard plastic or porcelain toilet seat strips them of moisture almost instantly.
So they literally dry out and fall apart?
They do. They degrade and die rapidly. But respiratory and gastrointestinal viruses, like norovirus or influenza, have a completely different architecture.
How so?
Many of them are non-enveloped viruses, meaning they have this tough protective protein shell called a capsid.
Oh, wow. Like microscopic armor.
That's a perfect way to put it. This shell essentially acts like armor, allowing them to withstand cold, hard, dry surfaces for hours, simply waiting in a dormant state to be picked up by the next host.
That biological distinction is incredibly empowering. It means we don't need to be paralyzed by a fear of literally everything in the room. We just need to be highly strategic about the right things.
Exactly.
Though I do want to add a caveat from the sources. The toilet seat isn't a sterile operating table. It can harbor common bacteria like Staphylococcus.
It can, yeah. And in a poorly maintained facility, staph on a seat is a genuine vulnerability for someone with an open skin condition or a compromised immune system.
Right, that makes sense.
But for a healthy adult with intact skin, that is just not your primary vector of illness.
Which perfectly dismantles another myth. The idea that all public restrooms are uniformly filthy hazard zones.
Right, the threat levels vary wildly.
Because treating a luxury hotel lobby restroom with the exact same level of panic as a high-traffic highway gas station misses the point entirely. The Pitcot source points out that your behavioral habits determine your risk far more than the baseline cleanliness of the space.
Absolutely. The microbial environment of any room is dictated by cleaning frequency, ventilation systems, and surface materials. But your personal behavior is the ultimate filter.
Right. It's like locking your front door but leaving all the windows wide open if you worry about the seat but ignore the door handle.
That is a brilliant analogy. And if the seat itself isn't the primary enemy, my mind instantly goes to the moment we actually engage the plumbing. What happens to all those bacteria the moment we actually flush the water?
Oh my gosh, I have to laugh at the absolute absurdity of this, otherwise I'd never leave my house. Because we need to talk about the toilet plume.
Yes, the infamous toilet plume. It is a fascinating, if slightly unsettling, fluid dynamics phenomenon.
Unsettling is a polite way to put it.
Well, when a toilet flushes without a lid, which describes the vast majority of commercial public restrooms, the sheer mechanical force of the water rushing into the bowl creates a violent vortex.
Okay.
This energy whips up a fine aerosol.
So we are talking about a microscopic broadcast here. You are essentially dealing with an invisible, germ-filled sprinkler system every single time you hit that silver button.
Huh. That is an incredibly accurate way to visualize it. It's a mixture of microscopic water droplets and particulate matter from whatever was in the bowl.
Ugh.
And the sheer force of the flush propels this aerosol cloud upward and outward. Microbiologists have actually tracked this dispersal using lasers and specialized lighting.
Wait, lasers? Really?
Oh, yeah. They've detected bacteria, including E. coli, in a dispersal radius extending up to 1.5 meters from the bowl.
A meter and a half. That covers almost the entire footprint of a standard commercial stall.
It absolutely does. And gravity dictates that those aerosolized particles eventually have to land. They drift through the air and settle on all nearby horizontal surfaces.
Oh.
And if you map the geography of a standard stall, what is the most frequently touched nearby surface?
The toilet roll holder.
The toilet roll holder. The very thing you are reaching for, often while the flush is still completing its cycle.
Okay, so knowing we are standing in a 1.5 meter splash zone of aerosolized E. coli, what is the actionable hack here? Because we still have to use these facilities.
The physical mitigation strategy is straightforward. Flush and step back.
Just back away.
Yes. The moment you initiate the flush, literally step back out of the immediate zone before the vortex peaks. And most importantly, because you cannot dodge an invisible aerosol cloud entirely, you absolutely must wash your hands with rigorous thoroughness before you touch your face, your phone, your bag, or anything that will eventually come near your mouth.
Because the chain of transmission snaps the exact moment your hands are fully decontaminated, you can be in a room full of settling particles, but if your hands are clean before they touch your mucous membranes, you win the biological battle.
You neutralize the threat entirely.
Before we dive into the deep biophysics of exactly how to break that chain at the sink, we want to take a quick second to remind you to visit www.pitcot.com. Subscribe to our channel if you haven't and activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads. Also, press the like button and rate us if you love our show. It helps in the recommendation algorithm so others can access it too. And don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a rating.
So, assuming we are now operating in a room where the air has just been showered with a toilet plume and we are approaching tap handles crowded with resilient viral capsids, avoiding illness comes down entirely to the physics of hand washing.
We've all heard the 20-second rule. I mean, we've heard it since we were kids.
Everyone has a song.
Right, but I never actually understood the why behind it until reading the Pitcot ebooks. It isn't just an arbitrary suggestion to make sure you're paying attention. We are talking about the required time for mechanical friction to break molecular bonds.
Yes, if we look at the chemistry of how soap actually functions, it completely upends how most people approach washing their hands.
Oh, so?
Well, the average person assumes regular hand soap is an antibacterial agent that kills microorganisms on contact. It does not.
Right. Soap is not an assassin. Soap is a bouncer. I love this analogy so much.
It's perfect.
The molecules in soap are called surfactants, and surfactants have this fascinating dual personality. One end of the molecule is attracted to water, and the other end is attracted to the oils, fats, and bacteria clinging to your skin.
That dual nature is the key. When you apply soap, those surfactant molecules wedge themselves between the bacteria in your skin, binding to both the water and the lipid membranes of the microbes.
Okay, so they grab on.
Right, but the bouncer can't just grab the patron, you know?
Yep.
You have to physically escort the bacteria off the premises.
Yeah.
That is the friction. That is the rubbing. It takes roughly 20 seconds of physical mechanical rubbing to successfully pry those microscopic bonds apart.
Exactly.
If you just do a quick 5-second splash with some foam, you've essentially just given the bacteria a nice bath without actually evicting them.
Without the rubbing time, the biophysical process is simply incomplete. The bacteria remain anchored to the oils on your skin.
Gross.
Furthermore, we have to look at the geography of the hand. Most people furiously rub their palms together, but the palms are relatively flat and easy to clean.
True.
Bacteria accumulate in the complex topography of your hands, like the webbing between the fingers, the microscopic ridges of your knuckles, and most notoriously, deep underneath the fingernails.
So if you've just grasped the door latch of a public stall, you need to use those 20 seconds to aggressively dig your fingertips into your opposite palm, forcing the soap under the nail beds.
Yes, exactly that motion.
It doesn't take extra time within the 20 seconds, it just requires intentional direction.
Which naturally leads us to one of the most surprising, fiercely debated topics in sanitation science, how we dry our hands.
Oh man, the air dryers versus paper towels debate. When I read this section in the Pitcot materials, my jaw honestly dropped.
It seems like such a trivial preference, but multiple peer-reviewed studies have dissected this exact moment of the hygiene process, and the evidence is staggering.
Let's get into it.
Let's examine those jet air dryers. You know, the deafening high-velocity machines you see in almost every modern airport or shopping mall. A landmark study from the University of Leeds measured the bacterial dispersal of these machines and found that jet air dryers actually disperse 27 times more bacteria into the surrounding air than standard paper towels.
Wait, 27 times more? How do they even measure something like that? Do they just put petri dishes all over the bathroom wall?
Huh. Essentially, yes. In studies of this nature, researchers will often coat a subject's hands with a harmless marker bacteria, something not normally found in a restroom.
Okay, that makes sense.
The subject then washes their hands poorly to simulate real-world human behavior and then uses the jet dryer. The researchers then sample the air and measure the surfaces at various distances from the machine.
Think about the last time you were at a mall. You probably heard that deafening roar of a jet dryer kicking on. What you were actually listening to was a machine aerosolizing bacteria across the entire room.
Right.
So these futuristic machines are essentially just germ cannons.
From a fluid dynamics perspective, yes. Jet dryers push air at incredibly high velocities to physically scrape water off your skin.
Right.
But remember the human element. Most people do not wash their hands perfectly. They skimp on the 20 seconds of friction. So any bacteria remaining embedded in the oils of their incompletely washed hands get ripped off by that extreme airflow.
Oh, I see.
The water droplets act as microscopic vehicles, carrying the bacteria into the restroom environment, aggressively contaminating the air up to a meter away.
Where they drift down onto the sinks, or far worse, get actively inhaled by the next person walking by to check their hair in the mirror. Whereas paper towels function entirely through capillary action and absorption. You don't broadcast anything. They just pull the moisture and any remaining microbes directly off your skin and trap them in the paper fibers.
The scientific consensus here is crystal clear.
Mm.
If paper towels are an option, default to them every single time.
Wow.
It is a minor behavioral choice that yields a massive difference in your personal microbial exposure. However, if only an air dryer is available, the mitigation strategy relies entirely on your friction.
Right, back to the 20 seconds.
You must wash your hands with extreme surgical thoroughness to ensure there is zero residual contamination on your skin before you expose your hands to that high-velocity airflow.
Okay, so perfect 20-second mechanical friction followed by a paper towel is the absolute gold standard. But what if the facility just completely fails us?
It happens all the time.
The soap dispenser is bone dry, the paper towels are jammed. Or what if you're trying to navigate all of this invisible fluid dynamics with a toddler in tow? I've always viewed hand sanitizer as the ultimate invincible shield. If I have a bottle of alcohol gel in my bag, why do I even need to bother with the sink? Is there a catch?
There is a significant catch, actually. Hand sanitizer is an essential piece of your personal toolkit, but relying on it as an absolute shield is a mistake.
Why is that?
First, the chemistry matters. It must contain at least 60% alcohol to effectively denature the proteins of most pathogens. But more importantly, it was a chemical intervention, not a mechanical one.
Meaning it doesn't remove physical dirt or organic matter.
Precisely. If your hands are visibly soiled or covered in grease or organic material, the alcohol cannot penetrate that physical barrier to reach the bacteria underneath.
Oh, that makes total sense.
Furthermore, while high-content alcohol is highly effective against a broad spectrum of microbes, it is biologically powerless against certain threats. It cannot penetrate the tough exterior of Clostridioides difficile, known as C. diff spores, and it has heavily documented limitations against certain strains of non-enveloped viruses like norovirus.
Right, because it lacks the physical bouncer effect to wash those tough capsids down the drain.
Exactly.
So the proper strategy is use sanitizer as a bridge. Use it immediately after exiting the restroom, right after you've touched that heavily contaminated exit door handle. Use it when you sit down before you eat. Just don't trick yourself into believing a squirt of gel replaces the mechanical friction of soap and water when a functioning sink is available.
And when we introduce children into this environment, the mathematical odds of transmission change dramatically.
Oh, I bet.
Children are exponentially more vulnerable in shared spaces, largely due to their specific behavioral patterns. Observational studies show that children touch their faces, rub their eyes, and put their fingers in their mouths approximately 3 times more often than adults do.
Plus, they are physically lower to the ground. They are operating right there in the splash zone, breathing the air closer to the contaminated floors and the lowest points of the toilet plume dispersal radius.
And critically, they lack the developmental impulse control to consider if they've maintained mechanical friction for a full 20 seconds.
Definitely.
But the pedagogical solution isn't to induce dramatic anxiety or yell at them about invisible germs. Children respond to tangible, concrete instructions.
Right. Instead of saying, don't touch anything, it's covered in E. coli, you give them a physical task. Like, we are going to scrub the bubbles until we've sung happy birthday twice, or keep your hands anchored to your pockets until we are outside.
You make it a matter-of-fact routine. You're building muscle memory. and the epidemiological data backing this up is profound.
Let's hear the stats.
Well, the Pidcock sources reference data from the Global Handwashing Partnership, which demonstrates that teaching proper, friction-based handwashing with soap to children reduces respiratory illness rates by roughly 20%, and it slashes gastrointestinal illness rates by up to 30%.
A 30% reduction in stomach bugs. That is a massive public health victory, achieved entirely through friction and soap.
It really highlights a core truth about how we navigate the world. We heavily rely on facility design to protect us.
We do. We just assume we're covered.
We hope for touchless sensor taps, automatic soap dispensers, and high-grade HVAC ventilation to pull humidity out of the air and inhibit microbial growth. But when those systemic safeguards fail, when the soap is empty or the touchless tap is broken, the responsibility for your health shifts instantaneously back to your own hands.
So an empty soap dispenser simply means you pivot to your personal sanitizer and you practice hyper-awareness regarding what your hands touch on the walk out the door.
Which brings us full circle to the anatomy of an infection. People rarely get sick because they simply walked into a room with germs.
Right.
They get sick because a highly specific sequence of events successfully completed itself. A contaminated piece of stainless steel transferred bacteria to unwashed human skin. That skin then bypassed the body's defenses by touching an eye or a lip, introducing the pathogen to a compromised immune system.
And the deeply empowering realization here is that breaking any single link in that physical sequence completely neutralizes the threat. You don't have to sterilize the room.
You don't have to control the environment. You just have to control your hands.
So what does this all mean for you listening right now? The incredibly positive takeaway from the Pidcock ebooks is that a public restroom is not a hostile enemy territory.
Not at all.
It is simply a physical space that rewards a basic understanding of biophysics. You don't need elaborate rituals, and you don't need paranoia. Go in. Step back from the flush to avoid the plume. Spend 20 intentional seconds using mechanical friction and soap.
Dry your hands completely.
Yes, opting for a paper towel to avoid aerosolizing anything left behind. And be strategic about the exit handle on the way out. That's it.
20 seconds of friction and water, and you have built an incredibly effective biological wall.
It really is that straightforward. And it brings us right back to that scenario we started with, standing in the doorway, calculating threat levels. We want to leave you with this provocative final thought. If your own mechanical habits, rather than the baseline cleanliness of the room, ultimately dictate your level of risk, how much invisible control do you actually possess over your health in every shared public space you walk into today?
It completely shifts the power dynamic back to the individual.
To explore the deep science behind these incredible insights, be sure to visit www.pidcock.com. Subscribe to our channel if you haven't, and activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads. Also, press the like button and rate us if you love our show. It helps in the recommendation algorithm so others can access it too. Thank you for being there with us, and don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a rating.
Thank you for listening to the Pidcock Podcast. I will leave a link in the description below.